Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Leader Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 2:11 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is August 26th. I thought I'd kick off today with the S&P 500. It was down about 0.5%. It'd be easy to think that the rather depressing news of three separate explosions in Kabul today is the reason for the weakness that we've seen come through in some markets, but the reality is that Jay Powell is speaking at Jackson Hole tomorrow, and there have been a succession of non-voting members of the Federal Reserve Standing Committee, or Open Market Committee, sorry, that have been coming out and saying that an urgent need is present to begin tapering right now. So that's very easy for them to say, and it certainly helps the Fed to talk the market down. But the reality is that they're not voting members. They get to say whatever they want because they don't have to, in fact, make any decisions until next year. Whereas the voting members, they don't get to talk very much at all. So Jay Powell tomorrow is either going to tell us in simple terms whether they're going to taper soon or whether they're going to delay. There's plenty of uncertainty still around, and then of course I was speaking with a doctor last night where she was saying that their beds are full all around Dallas, and also that they have been canceling operations. So that's basically the hospitals giving up on their revenue raising or their revenue making ability when they cancel operations. Obviously, there is a threat from the Delta variant. It hasn't quite gone away yet, but there are expectations that the pace of new infections has in fact peaked, and therefore we should start to see figures reflecting that within the next 3 weeks. Then, if we simply take that at face value, there might be the rationale by the Federal Reserve that we're at the peak or the worst of the Delta variant scare right now, and that any measures that will be taken to begin tapering, perhaps at the end of the year, would be happening well after that particular source of stress has been excised from the markets. But the other thing, of course, is that the S&P 500 has had a succession of occasions where it hasn't really been able to hold new highs. So it made a new all-time high earlier this week, and now it's pulling back again. And when we then just flip that around and look at the VIX index, well, the VIX came down with a bang at the end of last week. And now it's starting to steady once more. Now, we still have this succession of lower rally highs, and that's been evident since the really big peak back in March of last year. But we also now have a sequence of higher reaction lows, and this would appear to be a second one. So then this trend of volatility contracting is narrowing, and it suggests that it's going to be more difficult to continue to see new lows eked out over the course of the next while. And that's not that surprising, considering the fact that we are only 15 months on from a very big shock for markets, and we don't exactly know how the global economy is going to recover from this big dislocation that we've had. When we then think about the dollar, well, the dollar would benefit if tapering were announced, because it would imply that the supply of dollars is going to be contained. So a stronger dollar also helps to alleviate some of the inflationary fears that people are expressing some doubts about. But the other side of this equation is that Europe is a lot further away from tapering than the US is. So the euro remains quite weak. It's at the lower side of its range overall, and the Europeans are in no rush to begin their own tapering. And then China, there was an important speech given by Xi Jinping today where he's talking about hitting their targets for economic development this year. And that is despite closing down half of the economy as a result of the Delta variant cropping up there. Well, the only possible way they're going to do that is through stimulus. So there's the potential here that we've seen about as much of an advance from the renminbi as we're likely to, and that there's the clear scope that they're going to have to at least allow the currency to weaken again in order to strengthen the outlook for achieving those economic goals in their program for government. So, at the same time as the dollar has a supply and elasticity argument behind it, then there are other major currency venues where they just don't have much interest right now in curtailing the quantity of currency that they're in fact printing. So, then one thing that people are expressing angst about is gold, and that's not altogether unsurprising considering the size and speed of the decline that we had 2 weeks ago. But we've subsequently rebounded from that. It's now right in the region of the trend mean in the psychological $1,800 area, and it was off the lows in here today. Well, it's not all that often that we see gold and the dollar rallying together, so it probably requires at least some explanation in the minds of investors. But I think it's perhaps more important to pay attention to what's going on in terms of the bond market, because yields are rising. There are two particularly, I think, important points here. The first is that we have broken the sequence of lower rally highs and we have a higher reaction low. So the yield got all the way up to the peak, just below 140 today, and then paused. On the one hand, if the Federal Reserve is going to stop buying bonds or buying fewer of them, well, then that should remove a source of demand from the market, and that would imply a higher yield overall. I think the much bigger picture is that we're going to have a great deal of new issuance in the bond markets coming through in the latter portion of the year, and particularly once the US government has got over the hiccup of extending the debt ceiling. But once that occurs, then the Treasury is going to start issuing a great deal more additional debt to fund what's likely to be one of the biggest spending programs in history if the Democrats do in fact get any semblance of the plan that they have on the table through Congress over the course of the next couple of months. So, with a great deal more supply coming, well, then it would be natural to anticipate that yields would rise because it might drown out the market. So, if that's the case, why aren't yields rising more? Well, there's also the other side of this equation, which is that by tapering and potentially doing it too early, the Federal Reserve will sap the growth out of the market. And then, of course, there'd be more demand for treasuries. So we're at a finely balanced point here. What I find also interesting is that the IPO ETF, and these are stocks that are very interest rate sensitive, have paused in the region of the upper side of the range for most of this year. Well, a large number of these companies are loss-making, and some of them are rather a long way from making profits. So we can think about the broad outlook and the enthusiasm with which a lot of these companies have been welcomed into the market, and then just simply ask the question, well, how successful could they be with interest rates at 2%, 3%, 4%, or 5%, rather than close to zero, which is what we are at in the vast majority of instances. And it's also, I think, interesting here that the SPAC index is not rallying. In fact, it's been contracting for most of this year following the peak in February. So that suggests that these blocks of money that have been put forward to try and buy companies out, well, they're not finding the kind of attractive candidates that they might like. So there's not a real great big reason to own these types of funds unless there's a news flow to support the view that they're going to go off and buy something that's really promising. And of course, the success of the SPAC strategy is extremely interest rate sensitive as well. So we're looking at a market which is increasingly interest rate sensitive. And then the convexity of the market is something that no one's really had to worry about for an awfully long time. And if interest rates do rise and the Federal Reserve does taper earlier than expected, well, then it's likely to take a chunk out of the more speculative portion of the market. So we're certainly at an interesting juncture overall, and I think that's a good part of the reason why gold remains quite firm. Because if we simply take a step back and look at what's going on around the world, well, governments everywhere seem to be intent on inflating their problems away. And that is going to represent a significant loss of purchasing power for the currencies. So we have the real potential for competitive currency devaluation, where there's no country wants to tolerate having a strong currency. And while the dollar might be rallying right now, well, how much further will it be in terms of this rally before officials start taking fright? But the dollar index certainly has this higher process of our succession of higher reaction lows over the course of the last couple of months. Silver prices were a little softer in here today, and they haven't rallied to nearly the same extent as gold. So certainly there's room for a further improvement here, but we're definitely going to have to see a significant pop on the upside here in order to really confirm that the low is in fact in. And platinum prices continue to hover around the $1,000 area, a little bit below that. So certainly platinum and silver are looking somewhat weaker than gold is right now. The other commodity that's really worth highlighting is natural gas. It was up in a very dynamic manner in here today. It's closing above the $4 area. It's on the back of supply and elasticity, and that is before we start to see storms coming into the Texas and Louisiana borders over the course of the next couple of days. So there's certainly scope here for some additional upside. It's really then a question of how much further will the price rise, because every time it's rallied through $4 over the course of the last decade, it has failed. So it would need to sustain a move above the $4 area in order to truly confirm that we are back in a demand-dominated environment and beyond the short term, and that there is the scope for this extraordinarily long-term base formation to be completed. I do think that we're still a ways from that particular juncture. Oil prices today were a little softer, but have been up in an extremely dynamic manner so far this week. So following through on the upside key reversal, it would suggest a low of at least near-term, potentially medium-term significance for the oil price as well. And the Baltic Dry Index is also continuing to push higher. So we do have some inflationary pressures, and we're at this interesting juncture. And this, I think, is why people are so interested in what happens at Jackson Hole. Because in normal circumstances, with the size of the rebound we've had from the economy following a brief recession, then the central banks would probably be starting to think about withdrawing some of that liquidity in order to avoid a disorderly outcome in terms of inflation. Well, the Federal Reserve told us last year that they are adopting an average pricing model for inflation. And so far, they continue to think that this inflation is transitory. And as long as they think that, it's less likely to be transitory. Whereas if it were in fact transitory, the only way it's likely to be transitory is if the Federal Reserve thought that it wasn't, and they would intervene to ensure that it does turn into a transitory effect. So They are reluctant to act, but at the same time, what their actions are likely to dictate the outcome. So that's, I think, one of the more important points, because when the Federal Reserve moves, it moves with in a very big way. Now, when we look at what's going on around the rest of the world, obviously the crisis in Afghanistan is making headlines. And then, of course, we have the Green Revolution, and certainly then also you can think about Daimler and BMW and Volkswagen, who are abandoning the internal combustion engine and looking at developing their own batteries. Well, that is denuding the automotive sector, and particularly those parts manufacturers, of their biggest customers. So obviously then there is going to be an oversupply of assets, and particularly those that are in the parts aren't components for internal combustion engines. So are those assets going to become stranded? Will there be anything that those companies can do to reinvigorate demand outlooks? Because most of those companies are privately held. They employ hundreds of thousands of people, and they don't represent anything much from the stock market. When we think about the MDAX and its continued uptrend and its commonality overall with the FTSE 250, and then the two of those have got strong commonality with the S&P 500. So we're certainly seeing a significant advance and very strong commonality coming across in stock markets, and we have short-term overbought conditions. So it wouldn't be beyond the bounds of possibility that we get at least some consolidation of those very powerful gains. But in order for a break in the sequence of higher reaction lows to hold, well, we would have to see that there'd be a real big question about liquidity. So we're at this interesting juncture for the dollar, for bonds, and for equities. And it's likely, in my view at least, that tapering will be put on the back foot, and there'll be less discussion of tapering in the immediate future. But I could be wrong. And the Federal Reserve might feel that the inflationary pressures are already too high, and that they find themselves unwilling to stomach inflation overall. It's also, I think, worth reminding ourselves that the S&P 500 tends to have a consolidation after it's been up about 100%, and it's up around 105% right now. So it's not like we're not due some pause in consolidation, but we haven't really seen it yet either. And then when we look at the wider market, well, the Japanese market has continued to be quite firm in the region of the trend mean, and it was in positive territory in here today. The Australian market has been performing rather similarly to Wall Street as well, so it continues to price in the continued supply of liquidity overall. The Chinese market, on the other hand, despite the fact that they have clearly stated that they want to try and achieve their growth goals, well, the CSI 300 was in negative territory today, and the Hang Seng was in negative territory, and the H shares were in negative territory. So we're at a point where investors are looking at the size of the pullbacks we've seen in China and thinking this is a value proposition. And there's some argument for that, because when you get a company like Alibaba down 50%, well, it's rational to think that the valuation is attractive enough on simply a price to earnings ratio or a price to cash flow ratio that it's interesting. And we've had a rather extreme bout of political volatility, or politically induced volatility, in China over the course of the last few months. So if they really do want to hit their economic goals, it would behoove them to stop trying to attack the financial markets. So we might be at a medium-term low, and I do think that there is the potential for a reversion to the mean, and that could be a move in the order of about 1,500 points for the H-share index. But in order for more than that to occur, we'd probably have to see a really big change in the attitude towards the stock market, and that's not readily apparent. Well, there's been a lot of talk about, just how much Alibaba or Tencent have pulled back. But I think what's been getting less talk is just how much Kweichow Moutai has been pulling back, because even after this pullback, it's still the largest share on the CSI 300. And it did spectacularly well because it was the favored drink of the party officials. So it was viewed as one of the most favored of companies. But during this, and of course, what they're trying to do now is to ensure that there isn't any cost inflation going on, or I guess price inflation going on ahead of the Mid-Autumn Festival. But then they are also at the rather interesting situation that they're selling an expensive product, one that many people are not at liberty to buy, and it doesn't gel very well with the revisiting of communist ideals. So the share price has pulled back in a violent manner. It is oversold in the short term, but it looks like a completed top formation. So it's really then only a question of whether we're going to get a full reversion back to the mean, or the price isn't going to come back down again. And I think it's interesting to contrast the uncertainty that we're getting around China with the steady environment we get in India, because this is a sea change. Usually it's India where people are worried about governance, and they're worried about corruption, and worried about just how chaotic it is. And now India's market remains really very consistent on the upside, and we have these successive rounds of political volatility coming through in China. So India is certainly shining here, just simply by virtue of just going its own way. And then Vietnam has been pausing here in the region of the trend mean. And one challenge that Vietnam has is obviously in curtailing the spread of the Delta variant, but then also that it just has to regain a place in the world, and that it's got to plot a route away from China. So we're getting a pause in the stock market right now, and it doesn't look like anything other than that, but it's a lower rally high. So there's also the question of global economic growth, because obviously we have a lot of uncertainties about the pandemic, but then we also have this massive green revolution that's going on, and what is effectively going to be a denuding of the Mittelstand in Germany, because a lot of those companies are not listed, so it's not going to show up in the stock market, and the DAX index remains really quite firm overall. But it does hold out the prospect for electoral upsets, and that could have an effect on Germany, and most particularly if it forces the government to be more generous in terms of how they assist disadvantaged communities, because there's likely to be a lot of them if we do go ahead with the rollout of almost exclusively electric car brands. Well, there just won't be the need for all of those additional parts and components that a large number of privately held German companies produce, and that's likely to have a significant knock-on effect. It's also likely to be negative for the euro overall. So there's a lot of competing narratives going on right now, but the most important is whether we continue to see abundant liquidity, because liquidity lifts all boats, and I think we'll get at least some answer from Jay Powell tomorrow. So I'll leave with that. I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.